8 o'clock.
It's time for more 92.9 The Game tonight.
Let's keep it going now.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Hour number two of the program here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Chris Thomas, Turtle, with you until 10 o'clock. We got zippity-doo-dah going on in Mets Braves right now. It is the top of the fourth inning, or bottom of the third inning, rather. And Braves are, they're doing a little bit of something. But no runs pushed across so far by either squad. Schwellenbach on the mound for the Bravos. In about 10 minutes from now, we'll talk to our buddy Pete Hoffman from WFAN in New York. He's also the co-host and producer of the Rico Baronia podcast, the Mets podcast for Odyssey. They do a great job over there. They put out, man, these guys work. I mean, I think, because I follow them on social media, I think they put out an episode of that podcast every day. And it's just because it's he and it's Evan Roberts who does the afternoon show, the Dukes and Bell equivalent, if you will, in New York. And they are both diehard Mets fans. And anytime they're pissed off, which is, if you know something about New York Mets fans, a lot, because they usually suck, not this year, but they have a lot of episodes because they're always, you know, whatting and complaining about something. But we'll talk to him in about 15 minutes. Right now, I want to talk to you at 404-726-0929. Again, if you're just tuning in, question of the night: Falcons fall to the Chiefs 22-17. Are you more positive about keeping it close versus the champs? Or are you a little worried or feeling negative about the exposed parts of this team, including big time of possession difference, losing Dalman and McGarry, the running game slowing down, third downs, two failed fourth downs, and of course, everyone's apple of their eye right now, Zach Robinson, who's been catching a lot of heat as a new play caller. All right, 404-726-0929. Nick is in Columbus. Nick, start us off. What do you think?
Hey, what's good? So I just had a little bit of concerns of how they use Bijan Robinson. It seems like the past, since he's been drafted, they've been having a hard time trying to, like, utilize him to the best of his ability in the offense. But, yeah, that's all I had. Thank you.
Appreciate it. Dom, correct me if I'm wrong, but he had, like, 900 yards rushing and 450 yards receiving last year. So, I don't...
Yeah, he was pretty good.
Pretty good. Are they? I mean, that's like the guy who called in and said that the linebackers are having an issue right now for the Atlanta Falcons when Caden Ellis and Troy Anderson combined for like over 20 tackles in the last game. I get it. Anderson's been a little all over the place. He's also, you also got to remember, guys, he's coming back from a season-ending injury, and he's young, and he's a converted quarterback who's just starting to play linebacker in the league. 404-726-0929 if you want to weigh in. All right, let's hear from some of the guys after the game. Let's start with Kirko Chains, and he was talking about something that we've been talking about all night, which is these third down issues. And he said, yeah, we got to be better.
I think, you know, it's important that we stay in third and manageable. And I think we were in better third and manageable tonight than we were week one. But, you know, we've got to do all the things you got to do on third down, which is to, you know, see it right, throw it right with accuracy, get the ball out, you know, protect well, get open, all those things. And haven't been good enough, got to be better moving forward.
Yeah, and you won't win on Sunday if you don't do those things either. The Saints put up 90 points in 2 weeks. I don't know what happened against the Eagles. We asked Joe Patrick, and he was like, I don't know. I guess they just figured it out. I mean, hopefully Jimmy Lake and Raheem will figure it out too, but I don't know. All right, Kirk Cousins was also talking about the lulls that this team gets into on offense during the games.
I don't have a great answer for you. I think each play kind of is its own entity, but I'd agree with him that we didn't sustain drives enough in the second and third quarter. You know, certainly the end of both halves was disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, again, the end of the game, you stall out twice on fourth down, and that's it. You lose. I mean, you can't get a yard. So what are you if you're not a run-first team with this squad and Bijan Robinson and the offensive line? I don't know. That's your whole identity right there, and you just simply put, like Kirk said, you got to be better. Jesse Bates also spoke, and he was talking about the cliche in football is you got to flush it. You got to flush this week and move on to the next one, and that's what he said.
A loss is a loss.
loss. You know, you never want to, you know, lose. You know, start off 0-2 at home. We want to, you know, get this city behind us. But I think it was a hard-fought game. A lot that we can learn from and, you know, really build off of. You know, tough loss. Like I said, it is what it is. Now we're off into divisional. And that's the most important thing. And we'll be ready to get back to work.
And that's something we talked about with Joe Patrick too, right? Getting the fans a win at home. It feels like it's been, oh man, forever since this team has been rocking and rolling at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It's been a long time. All right, Jesse Bates also was talking about, overall, he thought, you know, the defense played pretty well, and they did.
You know, that's an offense that, you know, they always find a way to win, find a way to move the ball. And I thought that we did a really good job for the most part of, you know, keeping some explosive plays off of us. You know, I feel like they threw out everything that they had, and I thought we did a really good job of responding. I think the runs got a little leaky tonight, but yeah, man, just got to clear up some of our third down stuff, and I think we'll be good. When you can force an offense like that to, you know, kick field goals in the critical games like that, it gives our offense a chance to get back in the game. So, and that's what we did today.
Yeah, I'm not worried about the defense at all. They've been really good in all three games. I'm worried about the offense, specifically the play calling, specifically now dealing with the losses of two offensive linemen. One more from Jesse Bates before we take a break. He said Justin Simmons did a great job on that interception.
Kind of like a coverage disguise. We disguised it, and he slid over, and, you know, Mahomes probably thought it was open. And Justin did a good job of trusting it and making a play.
You know, it's like in baseball, like some teams, like the Nationals, just give the Braves a pain in the butt every single time they play. Justin Simmons has Pat Mahomes' number, man. I think he has 6 picks on him in his career, which is insane if you think about that. I don't care that they play twice a year, but yeah, it's pretty amazing. All right, before we catch a break, we got one more caller that wants to chime in. Brown in Riverdale, finish us off. Brown, what do you got?
What up, yo?
Yo.
I'm not worried. If anything, I'm somewhat ecstatic because they're never talking about the Falcons in social media circles or in the national media circles, I should say. And everybody who watched that game knows that the Chiefs didn't actually win it more so than the Falcons gave it to them. And on top of that, the two losses that we do have, luckily for us, if we make it happen that way, they're AFC losses. In the grand scheme, they don't mean anything. So the season really starts now. Just like we had 3 preseason games, we had 3 games under our belt now to kind of get the kinks out or kind of work through the problems or whatever. And now it's go time. The division is there. Everything we want is right there ahead of us.
Yeah, Brown, great call. Appreciate it. And I think if you are on the positive ledger, that's exactly how you need to look at it. Brown summed it up perfectly right there. All right, 404-726-0929. Hey, Braves put up a couple of runs now. Don't look now. They're up 2-0. Luis Severino on the mound for the Mets, who switched zip codes, but not – he didn't have to move. He just went a couple of miles up the street in the city to Queens from New York, from Midtown in the Bronx. So he's pitching for the Mets tonight, and Schwellenbach's going for the Bravos. Coming up next, we will talk to Pete Hoffman, host and podcast producer for WFAN. What does he think about this team? Did you know the Mets have the best record in baseball since June? Yeah, we'll talk about that and a whole lot more next.
Pace yourselves. It's going to be a crazy night.
This is 92.9 The Game tonight.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We'll get back to the Falcons conversation coming up in just a couple of minutes. But right now, we got to talk some Braves baseball because they are in a critical, would be an understatement, series with the Mets. Yeah, if you would have told me that about 3 or 4 months ago, I would have said, what? The Mets? When did this happen? And then lo and behold, they're off on some kind of run right now to talk about that and everything MLB. We welcome in our good buddy Pete Hoffman, going all the way back to my days at WFAN back in New York City a long, long time ago. Pete, great to have you on and appreciate the time.
Chris, thanks for having me, man. I'm stoked. And yeah, dude, it's been a while, man. What's going on?
Yeah, everything's great, man. Both of us doing our thing. You stayed home. I traveled abroad. And here we are, both doing the sports talk radio thing. I love it. So tell me, first of all, how we got here. The Mets, seemingly, we're going to have a rebuilding year, potentially letting Pete Alonso go. We'll get to that in just a second. And now they find themselves being the hottest team in baseball.
Well, let's be serious here, Chris. I mean, part of it is, you know, baseball as a whole is a bit mediocre this year. I mean, it's starting to tell, you know, separate a little bit now towards the end of the season. But for the most part, the beginning of the season was just very mediocre, blah at best. And for a Mets team that went, you know, everyone knows the story, losing five to start the season, then being down 11 games under 500 at the end of May, and now going on this pace where they're two games over the Braves. Let's be serious. It's crazy. But that's just because of how baseball was. And then on top of that, too, they have been – Carlos Mendoza has been able to keep the Mets together, have been able to really just keep, like, their heads above water and be a resilient team, whether that's the leadership of Francisco Lindor, whether that's the pitching staff just becoming ace-like on every single night. It's been impressive to watch. It's been a little bit of everything, and you know, you can go through the gimmicks, grimace, whatever, but it seems kind of special, very reminiscent of a few other NL East teams over the past few years.
Yeah, I think I can pick up what you're putting down there. You mentioned the pitching staff. They obviously lose their ace, Kodai Senga, comes back for about three or four innings, then gets hurt again. How have you guys been able to manage that starting rotation and make it to where it went from a seeming weakness to now to strength?
Oh, let's be serious. I mean, first of all, again, tip the cap to David Stearns, because this whole offseason, all I heard was, go get Blake Snell. Go get Jordan Montgomery. And don't get me wrong, Blake Snell definitely turned the corner halfway through the season. He's ace-like again, Cy Young-like again, whatever. But Jordan Montgomery's been a stiff. And they invested in Sean Manaea, who was somebody that they saw, they thought that they had, saw something in him towards the end of the season. He developed a sweeper. And he was pitching well. And then he watched your boy Chris Sale dominate. And he basically stole his delivery, and he has been untouchable now for going on a couple months. And along with him, Luis Severino, which, by the way, let's talk about a Yankee team last year who had Luis Severino and Carlos Mendoza, and they couldn't figure out what was wrong with Luis Severino. He was tipping his pitches, dude. So all he was doing was tipping his pitches, and you had to all they had to do was figure that out. Well, the Mets figured that out. Carlos Mendoza figured that out, the rest is history. And listen, he has been, maybe he's fallen off a little bit the tail end of this year because he's pitching so many innings, which is rare for him. But between him, Quintana, David Peterson has stepped up in a big way. The pitching staff just really has been solidified. And I think a lot of that has to do with this whole pitching lab that they have down in Florida. Like, you know, they've worked on it, and the investment is paying off, finally.
Talking all things Braves and Mets with our buddy Pete Hoffman from WFAN in New York, host there, as well as the Rico Bronya podcast with Evan Roberts. You can get that on Odyssey or wherever you get your podcasts. All right, let's talk about some of the guys in the lineup. Francisco Lindor, for anyone who hasn't been paying attention, is definitely going to garner some votes for MVP. We know they signed him to the massive, massive contract a couple of years ago. Outside of this year, and this year included, I suppose, has he been living up to that deal?
See, you're going to hear a lot of noise from people that say, no, he hasn't. But, I mean, as a diehard Mets fan that watches him every day, first of all, he's been missing in action, for 5 days now, 6 days, whatever it's been. You see what he means on the field. Luis Angel Acuna is playing an excellent job at shortstop, but the range that Francisco Lindor has is incredible. Balls that, you know, were sneaked by Acuna going, I think Lindor would be able to get that. Like, his defense is impeccable. I don't understand how he hasn't won a gold glove yet with the Mets, but maybe that'll change this year. And then his offense, I understand that the first month of the season is a crap show for him. He is just not who he is on a regular basis in April, and I can't figure out why. But he turned it on end of May, and from the end of May on, I mean, besides that guy Shohei Ohtani, there's no one else that hit the baseball like Francisco Lindor. I mean, stealing bases, he was doing everything. Guy really put the team on his back. And if it wasn't for Shohei Ohtani, you could say he's an MVP.
Yeah, and we're looking at a couple of other guys now that I want to bring up that are MVP candidates when they're playing up to the back of their baseball card, and that's Matt Olson and Pete Alonso. A lot of similarities there, Pete, because Matt Olson has had a total roller coaster of a season, gone through prolonged stretches where he was ice cold, but he's still going to finish with over 30 home runs and 100 RBI. Pete Alonso having a very similar season there in New York. The difference is, Pete, he's looking for a new deal, whereas Matt Olson got his bag. Are the Mets going to bring him back?
I mean, that is, Chris, you know, that's the toughest question I think you've asked so far. I think that the Mets need to bring him back because talk about, you know, the history. I mean, Pete Alonso in one more season will break the home run record for all time for Mets home runs. I mean, that's not even the tail end of his career. So, I mean, he's just going to tell if he sticks around for another 5-6 years, he'll just blow through that home run record plus some other things too. And I think that the Mets should, because he's a guy that you don't need to build around, but he's a part of the puzzle. And he, like you said, like Matt Olson, not having the greatest year either, but still put up those massive numbers. And how many other people are just going to walk through the door, play first base, and put up those massive numbers, even in a down year where he's batting .244, 34 home runs, 88 RBIs. I mean, for a bad year, I'd love to have that bad year. I think we'd all love to have that bad year. Same thing with Matt Olson. So I think that the Mets, it may be weird. I think there may be another qualifying offer in there. Maybe it's a smaller deal to start. Like, I don't know if you saw what happened with Matt Chapman, and I know that Blake Snell maybe was looking for an extension too, but maybe it's a smaller contract, and then they can work out something bigger. And I would love to see him back. I think he will be back. I think it will work out. I know he should be back, but I do think he'll be back. But here's the other thing too. I do want to compare something because you brought up Matt Olson, and you guys got him so cheap.
Yep.
Even in a bad year, you got him so cheap, Chris. Pete Alonso, I still think, is going to find a way to get paid.
Yeah, and I just wonder what that is. Is it going to start with a two? I think that's going to be a big question. It didn't for Matt and other guys in this Braves organization like Freddie Freeman, and they got a decision to make about Max Fried this offseason. The contract situation can get very, very dicey. Speaking of money, let me ask you about Mr. Moneybags himself, Steve Cohen. What is the perception in New York about his time spent being Mets owner? Have they feel like he's done enough to put them in a championship contention?
Yeah, I mean, you think about how much money they're spending. I mean, next year there's actually like $173 million coming off the books, which is crazy to think, and they're still going to be paying $200 million on a payroll that you're like, well, who are you paying money to? But, you know, I think he's done what he's needed to. And that's the whole point with Steve Cohen is he does what he needs to. He doesn't have to spend money. He chooses to, and he chooses to. Like, you know, Billy Epler, when he was here for the 2 years, you know, basically, don't trade my prospects and try to build the best team possible to get us a championship. Like, kind of quick fix type of thing. So, if you notice, there was real no long-term deal. The only long-term deal that they ever signed was with Francisco Lindor. So I'm not really upset with how he's gone about spending his cash because it hasn't hindered the future. And I think most people realize that even though Billy Epler was here and he did get signed for those couple of years, they never really settled on a GM. They never really settled on the, you know, president of baseball operations, who was always going to be David Stearns. That's the guy he always wanted, and the Brewers didn't want to give him up. So the fact that he waited patiently, got the guy he wanted to bring in and change the organization, I think that was the smartest move. And in the meantime, he basically tried to pay for a championship, and it backfired. But now the combination of David Stearns' mind and the ability to have cash when needed, I think it's going to be amazing. And again, it just shows this year they have a huge payroll. But who are they paying right now, Chris? They're paying Max Scherzer, Justin Verlander. They're paying James McCann to hit home runs off of them. I mean, it's amazing how many people they're paying who cannot be on the Mets this year.
Yeah, and that's why I think this year, initially, before they went on that run, was regarded as sort of a reconstruction, a rebuilding year, if you will. But speaking of reconstruction and rebuilding, as we're chatting with our buddy Pete Hoffman from WFAN, host in New York, and a great podcast as well, the Rico Bronya podcast. Check that out on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Are they going to pull the ultimate coup this offseason? Because I'll tell you right now, Pete, the Braves certainly are not well out of their tax bracket, but are the Mets potentially going to steal Juan Soto from the Yankees?
You know, Chris, this is the easiest question you've asked me. 100% they are. There's no doubt about it. You understand that there is not one team out there that could outbid Steve Cohen. So if it's just based on pure financial ability, Steve Cohen's going to nail Juan Soto in the offseason. He's going to offer him – I mean, listen, how much is he going to get? I still think Soto's going to get closer to $750 million. I know that's crazy to think, but I truly believe that. That's the number that I'm thinking of. He's going to be closer to that than $600 million. That's what I'm saying. He's going to be somewhere in between those two numbers, and he's a special player. He's 26 years old. He's going to sign a deal for between 13 and 15 years. You know, he's going to be a career whomever after this moment. That's it. He's set for life. Shohei Ohtani made $700 million. I know he's supposed to be a pitcher, but guess what? He's not pitching this year. There's a lot of deferred money, all this stuff and more. The guy's great, but he's 30-plus years old. Really, who knows how long Shohei Ohtani's going to pitch? Juan Soto is still 26. He's in the prime of his career, like at the start of his prime of his career. Guy's going to be unbelievable for the next decade. He's cashing in, and unless Juan Soto chooses to take less money by a lot, he's going to be a New York Met next year.
All right, before I let you go, we'll sneak in a football question here. The Falcons get the Giants towards the end of the season. What kind of squad are they going to be facing?
You know what? I mean, right now you've seen a mixed bag in these first 3 weeks. The first week was just a debacle. The Giants always now have played 2 years in a row where the first game, you know, you just kind of want to, rip it from the records, don't want to show it to anybody, it's the worst game ever. I don't know which game was worse, either last year versus Dallas or this year versus Minnesota. They just don't show up on the first day. So I don't know what happens there. But they played well enough that they could have beat the Commanders in week two. Their defense was really good. They bent a little bit. They didn't break. They only allowed field goals. But imagine this, a team that doesn't allow a touchdown – doesn't allow a touchdown. They score three touchdowns, and yet they still lose. It's the first time in like 100 years it's ever happened. The Giants are amazing. They find ways to lose. But last week versus Cleveland, things started to click. First of all, I know people want to run Daniel Jones out of town. They love to do that. But DJ and the offense have now put up six touchdowns, offensive touchdowns, in the past 2 weeks. That's something that you can't really – yeah, they haven't done that in the past. And I'm not saying – and the Browns are supposed to be a really good defense too. So the fact that they were able to put up some points, that was awesome. And the defense is scary. When Dexter Lawrence, Brian Burns, Kayvon Thibodeau, when they could figure it out and get to your quarterback, be worried. Now, I'm not sure how good the Atlanta Falcons offensive line is, but I would be scared for Kirk Cousins, especially if he's not 100% healthy, because Dexter will find a way to get to the quarterback. Secondary has some issues, working on it, but the front line, definitely you have to worry about.
Well, I'll tell you this, Pete, as we wrap up here, Falcons allowed six field goals to the Steelers in week one and lost 18-10. So we are all too familiar with that here. And by the way, Money Harris – little solo shot. Braves up now 4-0. So, Pete, I'll leave you with that little bit of good news there. Appreciate the time, my friend. Continued
thanks,
success.
Thanks, Chris. I appreciate that. That's a nice jab on the way out. I appreciate that.
Exactly. All right, Pete, we'll catch up with you soon. That is our buddy Pete Hoffman from WFAN in New York. And check him out on the Rico Bronya Mets podcast as well. All right, when we get back, if I'm on the air, you know what's happening. So don't be surprised. It's the producer six-pack. Dom filling in for Oren tonight. New flavor, new wrinkle. What's he going to ask me about? Well, stick around for 5 minutes and he'll tell you.
Let's go get it, baby. Let's go do it. Come on.
Sports doesn't stop at night, and neither do we.
Let's get the show going, man.
This is 92.9 The Game tonight on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
So I just had a thought, Dom, and it made me sad because Money Harris in the last half inning just made an unbelievable diving catch. And the thought that entered my brain was, you're going to see that on Web Gems later tonight, except you won't because there is no more baseball tonight because nobody cares, seeming on the national stage. Of course, in our local cities here in Atlanta, everybody's, you know, locked into baseball season. But I miss that, man. Mm-hmm. Before going to bed, before the 11 p.m. Sports Center, they used to do baseball tonight. They would wrap up all the games and a lot of the West Coast games. They would break down as they were going on, and then right as the show was ending, they'd give out their web gems. And Money Harris would have been on that list.
Thing of the past.
Yeah.
Thing of the past.
The golden days. Back in my day, you know, when baseball was America's pastime and everything was the way it should have been.
I would say that's how I feel. Do you remember when ESPN, when they had their NFL coverage and stuff, when they used to have the segment Jacked Up, when it was just guys who would, like, the guys would go and it was just like a compilation of the hardest hits from the week?
And before that, it was, I think, a little bit before your time, they used to have the VHS tapes of the hardest hits.
Yeah.
That was something that you got in the mail every year. Yeah, just reminiscing about those times. They were good times. But with that said, we'll stop reminiscing and start getting to what really matters, which is a producer six-pack.
Six questions, six chances to produce greatness. It's time for the producer six-pack on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
All righty. So,
by the way, real quick, Big Fly from the Big Bear. It is now 5-0.
There we go.
How about that?
All right, bravos. All righty. It's been a while since I've done a producer six-pack.
I have been locked at the hip with Eric Slaughter. I mean, I love my man E. He has been the only guy I've worked with, I think, for the past like 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
I guess that's just the way the schedule is working out. But yeah, I'm usually doing now. So I used to do 10-1 on Saturdays. Mm-hmm. Then John Fricke started doing 10-1 on Saturdays, and I would do 2-6. Or 1-5, whatever. Then, now we're in college football season, so college football game time with Fricky and Goforth ends at noon. So I'm doing noon to 4 a lot of the time. So it's just, but through that all the shifting, Eric Slaughter's been the guy that's been assigned to my show. So, but yeah, man, good to have you back on board.
Absolutely. All righty. So we got 6 questions here. Braves are off to a good start right now, so maybe that gives you a little bit of hint of an answer here, but fill in the blank for me. The Braves sweep the Mets if?
They do what they're doing right now, which is doing what they haven't done all season, and that is scoring runs. I'm confident in the starting pitching. Schwellenbach, great again tonight. We know Sale's your Cy Young Award winner. Lopez is on the mend. Freed's playing for a contract. So I feel good about the pitching. They just got a hit. And if they can keep doing this, I mean, Michael Harris is on fire right now, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Ozuna's picking it back up again. So I'm going to say the Atlanta Braves sweep. If they do, if they can repeat this formula tonight, you're in good shape.
I agree. I think that is going to be the thing for them is just, can they find the bats? Can they stay hot? Can they be just more consistent? Like I said, it's been, I heard Grant talking about it earlier with Carl and Mike, just a roller coaster of a season. Lot of hills and valleys.
Yeah, for the team and for the individual players. Unfortunately, yes. We did find out today, no Austin Riley for the rest of the season. But Gio Urshela, to his credit, he's been playing really well.
Absolutely.
He's not much of a power threat as Austin is, but he's playing a great third base and he's hitting. So,
mm-hmm. All right, I'm glad you brought up Austin Riley because that kind of leads into my next question here. So, obviously, the Braves have dealt with a ton of injuries. That has led them to struggle. Obviously, getting into the postseason is the main thing here. Another team here, or club here in Atlanta that has struggled, is Atlanta United. They're fighting for a playoff spot. Assuming both teams make it in, which team do you have more faith in to make a run?
It's not close. I mean, it's the Braves. Sorry, United faithful, five stripes. This is not the year. You are offensively deficient in ways that are not, I think, sustainable for a playoff run. I know they scored a couple of goals in some of their previous matches. Alexei Maranchuk had his first goal in, as a member of the five stripes, so good on them. But when you deal away Almada and Giannakoulakis in the same season, I mean, what do you expect? I mean, you can't score. I mean, Brad's been, I think, ironically through it all, I think Brad Guzan just won goalkeeper of the week in MLS. So, like, okay, so he's 48 years old and he's still playing really well. So, I just like the Braves, it's got to be on the offense. And we've seen the Braves do this before, take an injured squad, get hot at the right time, and win it all. So, got to be the Braves.
I'm not mad at it. I mean, it'd be nice. You know, Dax is going to retire this season. I mean, maybe they can do a little something for him.
This is going to be viewed as a transition year for United. When we go back 3 years from now and look at, you know, when Pineda was let go, you know, they're now going to be bringing in another new manager who's going to set the new tone. They're going to have a ton of money to spend, and I think this will be just looked at as a transition year.
That's fair. All right, next up. We talked a lot of Falcons in the first hour. No surprise, we're going to talk some Falcons now. How long are you going to give Zach Robinson before you hit the panic button? We're 3 weeks in, and the offense has seemingly gotten incrementally better week by week, but still not this great offense that we were promised. Granted, you played three very good defenses to start the season. How long are you giving Zach Robinson before you say, all right, it's time to make a change?
Oh, a change?
Not necessarily a change, but where the fact that, like, he's the problem.
Pretty soon?
Soon? Okay. So
Probably after this first stretch of division games. Because now we have back-to-back-to-back division games. Mm-hmm. So you should sweep. I know that's tough given the way that Tampa and New Orleans have looked in two out of three of their games, but... Mm-hmm. I mean, Carolina just won, but they're awful. I mean, is Andy if you let Andy Dalton beat you, you don't deserve it. That's what I'm gonna say. You don't deserve it, man. Much like when you let Bryce Young beat you last year 9-7. You don't deserve it. Yeah. Sorry, everything that happened was deserved. So if you can't go out there and show what you're worth over these next three games, and the offense doesn't. I don't want to say dramatic improvements because I think it's more about tweaks than it is about dramatic. Like, the ingredients are all there. Mm-hmm. They've just been so inconsistent.
Yeah.
So give me the next three games, and then I think that's a fair point in time to make a more firm evaluation about what he could be or what he isn't right now.
Okay. Fair enough. I think six games is a decent enough sample size. I agree. Next. So the Falcons currently sit at 1-2, which at the beginning of the year, I think a lot of people would have said, yeah, that's probably what they'll start.
Yep.
Now, because of how it's looked, I think a lot of people are worried. My question to you is, with the 1-2 start, are you more or less confident than you were at the beginning of the year that the Falcons will win this division?
I really would love to answer this question with a definitive statement, but I can't. Because I'll be able to answer that question at about 4:12 p.m. this afternoon after the Saints game is finished up. Because if you don't look good against them, we got a problem. Then we got a problem. Because you're supposed to win this division. There's no – I hate to say it because it just sounds harsh. It's Raheem's first year here. It's – Kirk's first year here, but if you don't win the division, that's a failure.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
And, you know, there is no excuse for that. So I can give you a more definitive answer. I'm leaning towards slightly disappointed because I just expected, I'm not going to lie, Dom, what I saw in camp really impressed me. Mm-hmm. And I've said that, everybody else has said that, mm-hmm. and it just looks completely different right now. I don't know why. I mean, I guess some of it is just that's preseason and that's, you know, training camp as opposed to putting the actual game, you know, tape on the field. But it just, it looks so good. Like, mm-hmm. yeah. Kirk was humming, everything was hot. Like, it was great, and now it's not. So, yeah, this Saints game is going to be huge, man.
Okay, so we'll take a rain check there. We'll circle back.
Right now, the answer's slightly disappointed, but that's going to change dramatically one way or the other based on what happened Sunday.
All right, let's get to some fun ones. You and I are both big Marvel movie guys, big comic book fans, stuff like that. My question to you, if you could be a superhero for a day, which superhero would you like to be? Only 24 hours.
If it's just for a day, that changes my answer.
Yes, only for 24 hours. You have 24 hours to be any superhero you want.
I'll tell you who it's going to be and why. It's going to be Nightcrawler. Because I could go anywhere.
Teleport?
Yep.
Like that?
I could knock out my entire bucket list of places I want to see in the world in a single day.
That is true. That's not a bad one. That's not a bad
one. He's also one of my favorite superheroes.
He's cool. He has a super cool design. Super excited. That X-Men show was amazing.
I know.
Cannot wait for
season two. He was so underutilized in the movies. They had him for the one movie. And they made him this, like, emo, like,
yeah, like
super, sympathetic, yeah. Like, kind of.
Woe is me.
Yeah, like, he wasn't really, like, a hero. Like, Nightcrawler, he's a badass, man. I don't know. So, yeah, I would take that just because, like, I mean, I guess technically with, like, Superman, you could do that too, Iron Man, but Nightcrawler's more low-key. Like, I feel like I could get away with it if I was Nightcrawler. Like,
also,
you could just blend in a little
bit. Yeah, it also just looks cooler the way, like, it smokes up when he teleports and jumps from one place to another.
Yeah, so I think that's my answer, Nightcrawler.
Not mad at it. Next question. So, I was thinking about this earlier today. I love guacamole. Love avocados.
Me too.
However, I didn't when I was a kid. So my question to you, what's a food that you hated as a kid that you love today?
Ooh, love? See, that's interesting. Because if it was tolerate, the answer would be sushi.
Really?
Because I wouldn't even go into a restaurant that had sushi.
We've had this debate before.
I can tolerate very, very minor rolls of sushi. The minute you start getting exotic with eel eggs and stuff.
So you're
like
just
that.
Like California.
Yeah, rolling. California, spicy tuna, little crab.
Yeah,
that's
simple
it.
Stuff. Okay.
I'm not going any crazier than that. But like actually love, you know what? Salad. I love salad.
Yeah, you know what? Because I think when you're a kid, like your idea of salad is just like lettuce and carrots or whatever, but like when you get older you can start to think of like, oh no, like I can make like a salad with a nice like vinaigrette and then I can add other things to it, and then like you kind of really expand on the salad.
Yeah,
and
just
it's
like
really nice,
like Seinfeld, like give me like a big, remember the episode with the big salad with Elaine and the big, she just wanted the big salad.
Yeah,
like I could just like, that sounds great, give me some grilled chicken in there,
mm-hmm.
a little shredded cheese, tomatoes, balsamic. You know what, now we're cooking.
Hey, I love it.
Now I want a salad, but a little too late for that at 9 o'clock at night. All right, Dom, great job. Coming up next hour, we're going to get to a PM Power ranking. I'm excited. I haven't done one of those in a little bit. Excited to do one of those with Dom. But coming up next, let's continue our Falcons conversation with Myles Garrett from Fox 5. He was in the building on Sunday night. We'll get his perspective on all things Falcons as we're rolling along. Braves up 5-0 on the Mets. How about that? Sports Radio, 92.9 The Game.